Maybe you want to kill the light for a second? I'm open to your thoughts.
I had a couple of thoughts. Remember the image where the eye shows up at the very beginning of two or three back at the very beginning of English the Plutus. Keep going. Where the eye breaks through the bedrock. But my first thought was that this new image was a reforming of the bedrock into ground. But then I had another thought that we're going into the eye now, and this is an image of the retina moving into the optic nerve, as Carol pointed out. But I think Carol has...
Oh, I mean going into it that way.
Going inside the eye, and then you're looking at the rods and the cones, maybe. I don't know. That's just my imagination. But Carol said she had a really great idea.
I did not say really great.
A different perspective.
I'm writing down your...
Kathy said it's really great. Well, I'm hoping it will be. She hasn't shared it yet.
When I look at that, I think about what he said earlier. He says the world of the inner is as infinite as the world of the outer. And here I have a feeling of going into that, into the world of the cellular. Mm-hmm. And an infinity of the cell, of the body. You know, going into the body in an infinite way, because he tries to give the feeling that you go into it in a more, deep in. It's like a well. It's like the cells of the body have turned into an infinite well, and he's going into the infinity of matter. And of course, then it's emphasized with the title, One of the Lowly. One, you know, the singularity, the wholeness of the lowly.
And the pieces get smaller and smaller as you...
Yes. And well, that, to me, that gives the effect of the infinite.
Mm-hmm. Of moving into the infinite.
Almost, it kind of sucks you into the center.
Exactly. That's what I meant when I said it's like looking down a well. Mm-hmm. And then overlaid is the big... What is that word? What is the
Einer is one of.
One. Yeah, one. The infant, you know, the blue is often the color of infinity.
It's E-I-N-E-R. Einer is one of. There is the. Niedrigen is lowly. I think it was substantially brilliant. Even if she doesn't want to admit it. Talking about you, Carol.
In order to get there, that bedrock has to break.
I like that.
Yeah.
And it's becoming color.
Yeah, because he talks about the bedrock of the psyche being the archetypes. Mm-hmm. And so if that bedrock is going to, if the archetypes have a center, that's the idea of the self as the ordering principle within. So that all really hangs together quite nicely.
And to think he did this during Christmas vacation.
Well, if you look at the size of that actual piece of artwork, I mean...
You've seen that?
Well, it's a facsimile edition.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
So what we're looking at in the Red Book is the size he painted it.
Right.
So it's like, whoa.
It's very, yeah.
You know, he was doing the whole mouse whiskers routine, I'm sure.
What do you mean?
That's what the Egyptians used for fine detail.
Oh,
mouse,
I see.
One or two mouse whiskers.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's painstaking work to paint all of those.
Well, it is. Mm-hmm.
It's a real meditation to paint something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe can we have the lights back again, I think? Those of you who did the Nietzsche, stop thinking of the pale criminal. It's snow-covered. It is a cold experience he's going through. Christmas. Well, it says December 29th, 1913. So 4 days after Christmas. He's dirty. He has only one scar. Only one eye. Scars on his face. He's poor and dirtily clothed. Some of this I'll look at very closely, so we can just touch on the main idea.
Votan, one eye?
I thought of that, yes. Votan is definitely one eye, and I didn't know whether this was Votan or not. Mm-hmm. I don't think every one-eyed figure is Votan, but...
We did have the one eye at the beginning there, yeah. And so I wonder if this is that eye in its lowest form.
Could be. And remember, Votan's... sacrificed an eye for wisdom. Okay. So Wotan is an incredibly complicated guy. He's the, you know, if you've seen The Ring, he's in the Wagner's, but I'm not sure that's such a good presentation of Wotan. He's a warrior, he's a poet, and he's a medium. And the runes are his gift. He's anywhere from
prophetic. Is that it?
He's anywhere from a prophet to a warrior, and one hell of a mean warrior. I mean, this is not like I fight just for defense. And you know, Jungfeld, that's what broke out in the Germans in the war, Wotan, which had been repressed by Christianity.
He gives about power in The Ring. I think in Wagner's Ring, he's very much about the power.
He strikes me so stiff in The Ring, mm-hmm. And I don't see Wotan as stiff. Anyway.
I'm a little confused about the remark you made of comparing this figure to the pale criminal. Is that what you were doing?
Well, yeah.
Wasn't the pale criminal the one who was not really, didn't really have the conviction to follow through?
Right.
But this fellow does.
Yeah, I meant to say, think of the argument around the pale criminal.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That this guy would be the unpale criminal.
Gotcha.
But the idea that the criminal is very positive. For those of you who don't know this part of Zarathustra, Nietzsche or Zarathustra rants at this criminal who's a weakling. And where Jung goes with it is real criminality, when it finds its first of all, we all have it in us. And the real meaning of it isn't that we go out and we commit a crime against other people, but that we have the courage to fight and beat an outlaw in the face of the wrong values of the society. I think, let's say the group that tried to assassinate Hitler, they were called and were hung as criminals, but they were serving life. They were trying to serve life. So that. And then Jung says, real criminals are people who are too cowardly to be criminal in the right way, to fight what is wrong in the society, even though the society brands them as criminals. And I think this guy here would be Jung's ability to stand up to the people he knows his work is going to offend. he's much more than that, but that's part of it. And any pioneer makes people mad. You know, Einstein was relativity was called a Zionist propaganda by a large percentage of the scientific community. Any new idea evokes resentment for a time. And the pioneer has to be able to stand through that and not collapse. We learn he's a locksmith. That's not too hard to interpret, huh? What do locksmiths do?
Open doors.
Yeah. So again, if you take the last section, we're seeing an image of just what Jung talked about. Here comes this lowly guy who opens doors. Again, the image can express what logic and morality stumbles over. Guy's not particularly interested in being a farmer. He's a city guy. Do you see the importance of that?
To keep with the pulse of society.
And the word civilization comes from city. Civilization is what happens in cities. So this guy is concerned about the life of a society.
Staying in relationship
to people. And to this, I think, in a way, we've got the seeds for Ion here, to the fact that history moves through groups of people, and he doesn't want to separate from that.
And then in Zarathustra and Nietzsche, they don't want to go into the city. They want to stay away from that aspect.
Right.
So Jung is doing the opposite.
Just the opposite. Going into the city and getting his hands dirty. Mm-hmm. Now comes an interesting point, and this is, I think, really up for interpretation. 265. Yes, we have moved on to another column. Second column, he's talking about the movie. And the guy says, one sees all sorts of stunning feats. There was one man who ran up houses. Another carried his head under his arm. Another even stood in the middle of a fire and wasn't burned. Yes, it is really remarkable the things people can do. And then Jung says to himself, and that's what this fellow calls mental stimulation. But wait, that does seem remarkable. Didn't the saints also carry their heads under their arms? Didn't St. Francis and St. Ignatius levitate? What about the three men in the fiery furnace? That's, you probably know that biblical reference. Now here comes the sentence to ponder. Oh, today's miracles are simply somewhat less mythical than technical. I regard my companion with feeling. He lives in the history of the world. And I? Now, what is he getting at here?
I thought synchronicity is what came to mind. The miracles in the world that are, I don't know.
But why this contrast between a banal movie and a sacred event, a technological production, and a mythological occurrence? Again, think in terms of what seeds of Jungian psychology we can find in these sentences.
Well, the technical is the rational, I mean, it's separated from experience in the body.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose he's talking about the sacred and the commonplace.
Yes.
And, you know, they... Who was it that said anything that's advanced enough technically will appear to be a miracle? What scientist said that?
I don't know.
Say that again? Yeah.
This isn't a direct quote, but the idea was that if something was advanced enough technically, it would appear to be magic, miraculous. Mm-hmm. Can't think of who that was.
But it sounds good.
Mm-hmm. But sort of circling around this idea.
Yeah. Well, where I was going with it, purely my personal interpretation, is this is his beginning to think about archetypes.
Mm-hmm.
That what looks like banal aspects of life are really expressions of a deeper psychological dynamic. And that we can find myth behind the events of daily life. It's just you have to know how to see it.
I also thought, too, since he was bringing up the history of the world, that Ion somehow enters into this.
And that I think we can extend what I said. You know, again, it's just my take on it. Again, the history of the world is a myth. Events are mythological.
That's why there's the historical cinema.
So again, how he mixes levels all the time. Where again, if you've ever heard academics speak, they pick apart little arguments and talk about things as separate that are really the same thing. But the linear mind, chop, 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 chop. And Jung is constantly saying, but look, a locomotive and a myth, they have something in common. Because you may have a Sumerian would have dreamt of a monster. We dream of locomotives, but it's the same thing. It means the same thing. Different forms of overpowering drives. Different way of expressing overpowering drives.
And we could consider our dream life as an internal cinema, which would have all of these strange images, but that there's something underlying that moving history, not just the individual, but moving history. Is that
absolutely
something he's getting at?
Absolutely.
Well?
I certainly think so.
Yeah, I'm thinking the world wars and the idea that you can plan the future and the future will happen in that plan, whereas that is just not true. I mean, we run into that in healthcare a lot, that if we make enough safety rules, then people will be safe. And there are thousands of ways people, you know, tragedy comes into life no matter how much you plan to have no tragedy. Because it's mythologic and it's always there. You can't plan enough to keep the tragedy out of life. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and that those events are mythological expressions. Or there's a mythological dynamic to life which is stronger than what we can control. And, you know, as I'm sure you know, as you are working on your dreams, you may, let's say, let's suppose you're at work and, you know, two patients code at the same time and a machine breaks and a pump falls at whatever, you know. You might dream that night of a flood. Well, it's the same flood that Noah dealt with. So these things are not two separate things. And then extending it, what Kathy's saying is, and so are the horrible events of history. And if we're going to, he's not getting into it now, but he will in his work. If we're going to understand the events of history, we have to understand them as mythological occurrences, not as consequences of choice. no choice at all. These things just bound into our experience and our behavior. Now, apropos the criminal, Wilhelm Tell. I must read that. Schiller wrote it. My grandfather was named for Wilhelm Tell, so being a Swiss guy, his name was Tell. The basic story, you know the story, right? The apple shooting. And what happened was Tell, I forget exactly the details, but he refused basically to kiss the butt of the ruling Austrians. At that time, Switzerland was dominated by the Austrian Empire. And so the punishment was shooting the apple. And I forget again how all the details work out in the story, but the king gets killed, and a revolution starts, and Switzerland declares its independence. So it's their 4th of July story, with Wilhelm Tell sort of like their George Washington. And see, again, that's the criminal, that he stood against a ruling power and was demonized for it, though it was in the service of life and justice.
When he talks about the King of Spain being murdered, what's he referring to?
Well,
the actual event?
No, I think it's just, I thought it was just nonsense.
That's what I thought.
He's kind of a drunk. Well, the King of Spain was murdered. We all should go have another drink. That's what I took it to mean.
Uh-huh.
And again, what I like about Jung's work here, if I've understood it right, is this guy is both reliable and unreliable, this lowly one. And part of what he says is just nonsense. And Jung says, well, that's just nonsense. But he says, then with his psychological mind, I wonder why he's talking about the death of a king. He interprets the nonsense mm-hmm. as containing some sense. And that is what gets him thinking of the importance of the lowly one in standing by this process of the transformation of values. He would be the ability to kill the old value or to appreciate that old values are being killed. Maybe more like it. I mean, just look at our country, which is a mess. The religious right, or the very right Tea Party, it's like, how do we get back to what we had? Getting course. We also had racism. We had.
Well, they want to outright reinstate segregation.
Do they?
Somewhere in Virginia, a Tea Party governor.
My point is how the tendency is to go back when values are collapsing. The tendency exists to go back to what was, rather than move forward and say, okay, where is this chaos leading us?
Mm-hmm.
And the lowly one would be the knowledge in Jung, don't panic at the loss of a world. Work on creating a new one.
Work on what?
Creating a new one.
And that's our individuation.
Each individual, as far as if we take the social significance of individuation, I think Jung would say, each person's journey is a little piece of what can guide a society towards the restitution of a better world.
So when he says the people would be free, that they'd be free to individuate, right?
Well, here I think, yeah, that would be the psychological meaning. Here it's a political statement that what
right.
Tell did was freed up.
Right.
I think it was the Habsburg Empire that mm-hmm. dominated Switzerland. And I forget when Tell was.
18.
Well, that was when the play was written.
Written.
I think he was 16th century. Or no, maybe 14th century. And Switzerland was, I don't remember, 1300, 1400, somewhere in there. It's old. Now, I like this part. Where did you lose your eye in a brawl? read all the detail. He was in a brawl. He stabbed somebody. But what I think is so important is this next step. Why did you have this brawl? It was over a wolf. What do you think that's about? Take it literally first, and then less literally second.
It's about to give birth. Literally, she's pregnant.
Well, not symbolically, she's pregnant. But yeah, there's no real pregnant woman in your life. I mean,
in this trance that he met, he's talking about this woman. I mean, it's all in
Yeah.
And so that would be
used again. Okay. So on the symbolic level and the level of its meaning, it would be the battle Jung is going to face for the idea his soul is presented to. Osler referred to the battle that would ensue as he was open about his relationship to Tony Wolf. And you probably heard me say that, at least from what I got from von Franz, he was offered a professorship at the university if he hid Tony Wolf. He said, no, I will not hide what I'm doing. And he would never was given a chair at the university because of that. All these guys had lovers. They just were hiding it. He said, no, I'm not going to hide. And that, I think that's an example of the battle that he would face because he was true to his feelings for her. Because in the next couple paragraphs, the guy dies. I'm not sure what to say about that, other than maybe it was time for him to die. Meaning that Jung was integrating what he represented. Mm-hmm. Because the next bit there, the paragraph before the two, he gave his eye for a woman and for her sake forfeited his good name. If there's any accusation I get, speaking publicly, again and again, is Jung was a bastard for having a lover. And that could be seen, I think, as the forfeit of his good name.
Mm-hmm.
But, and interestingly, today, not 30 years ago, but I think it's the way the conservative people protect themselves against dealing with him. Oh my God, if we listen to Jung, we're all going to have affairs. Well, your life might become more interesting if you did. I don't say that. You uptight little twerp. But I think Jung is accepting this is the road I got to go. This is what's going to cost me. And I'm doing it anyway. And in a way, we see all qualities that Jung lived in his life. He loved the human myth, after a fashion. He admired the wonder workers, praised the death of the tyrant, meaning praised the death of the old value system. See where I am? Right there, last paragraph there on. The first column of 266, before the number two. And vaguely dreamed of the freedom of the people. And then he miserably died like everyone else.
Yeah, that really sums it up in human terms.
Mm-hmm. Well, now he reflects on what he has just heard from himself. And he says, a destitute joins me in one's admittance to my soul. I am thus not destitute enough. And I think accepting that relationship, I don't want to say was destitute, but was living out something that, had he not lived it out, would have become the destitution of his children. He was sparing them from being saddled with unlived sexuality. And they all married happily. Where was my destitution when I didn't live it? I was a player at life. This is the wonder psychoanalyst prince. One who thought earnestly about life and lived it easily. There he was, living in a castle of a house paid for by his wife. The destitute was far away and forgotten. Life had become difficult and murkier. Winter kept on going, and the destitute stood in snow and froze. I join myself with him, since I need him. Another one of my favorite quotes, without the depths, I do not have the heights.
What was the next one after what you just wrote?
Yeah, go ahead.
He makes living with life easy. We don't think of destitute things that are easy.
I'm not sure I understand that completely.
Someone who's destitute doesn't have a lot of stuff. Their life is pretty simple. It's the basic.
I can't see the easy in that,
though. I think of it as in reference to my own situation that I was sharing earlier, when I was destitute and my whole spirituality was gone, at first that was really hard, but over time that has made my life much easier. Not having to, because I, you know, when people don't like me, I have to say, well, you know, they just don't. Whereas I could not get that place before. So it did take a burden off of me, of almost everything.
But to get that place, I think it's saying it releases, by going this route, he will release his best. That's what I got out of it.
I think that, you know, when people say, well, the poor have it easier, I think the bad's probably not true. I think that's a projection of something that ends up making things a lot worse. But I think going through something hard sometimes in the end releases you from the expectations you have.
Maybe he means more, maybe it's more an emphasis on you can get to a place where living is lighter and easier.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
that path is
right. Like, no, the path through is not, but
right.
The end result.
Yeah.
What's the word in German? I wonder. I wondered about the translation.
I can check. No one has the book here in the German. I'll check. You make yourself a note if I remember where I put my note. Speaking of notes, sorry to do this to you, but every year I get everybody's phone number. I forget where I put it. So. Let me just pass right. Well, I started one.
Okay.
Let me see if I can find it. I thought if I put it in a 3x5 card, and I put it in my 3x5 card rack, if I ever say to you, where is my list of things, you can say, it's in your 3x5 card rack. Now, if I remember where I put it.
You have to remember
now, if I remember where I put the card.
Still in the rack.
It might be. I thought I put it in my pocket so I wouldn't forget it. Oh, God.
We'll start a piece of paper.
Maybe you better start a piece. Oh, here it is.
Oh.
I got Ann, Sandy, Patty, and Barbara. So I got it somewhere. Just put it down there for me. Okay. What was I saying?
You were going to look up.
Remember to look up. Makes living light and easy. I don't think that will get much out of that, but I'll check.
Yeah, don't worry. I just wondered if it was a translation.
I'll check. That's easy to check. I think some of this, I mean, we've heard this idea before. I need the bottomist for my renewal. Three lines up from the bottom. Again, how he combines the lowest and the highest. And again, why are we bothering with all this top of second column on 266? But because I do not want to have it, my best becomes a horror to me. So you see, all of this is in the service of bringing out Jung's best. And Jung's best is the creation of Jungian psychology. And how we fear becoming our best. That's the idea. You normally, I'm afraid of, or people's problems are that they don't want to acknowledge their worst. Very often the problems are that they don't want to acknowledge their best. Because it brings a terrible responsibility to achieve it. Your best becomes a horror. I think that's the rest of that paragraph pretty much says the same. Next, again, some of this is stuff we've all heard. At your low point, you are no longer distinct from your fellow beings. You're not ashamed and do not regret it. Now, in this next paragraph, I think is hard. Let's go slow. Your heights are your own mountain. So heights would be your best accomplishment. And also the capacity for your best accomplishment, which belongs to you and you alone. There you are individual and live your very own life. If you live your own life, you do not live the common life, which is always continuing and never ending. The life of history and the inalienable and ever-present burdens and products of the human race. There you live the endlessness of being, but not the becoming. That makes sense? Those of you, if you don't seek to understand what you are capable of and realize you have a responsibility to develop your own gifts, then you stop growing and you become static. Being here, I think you mean static. And becoming is the continual growing and fulfilling of your potential.
Well, that explains the title of that painting I did when we started on this book, where that figure's swimming through space and the volcano's below and the planetary nebulas above, which was sort of like the Elijah and Salome forces. So this sort of brings me around to completely understanding it.
Did you say it explains the name of
the... Yeah, because I had called it Becoming.
Ah, okay.
Although I didn't really realize what all that entailed. Okay. This sort of puts a more practical meaning on that idea.
I think it's the changing of the bottom. I mean, it's one thing for, you know, people kind of grow up, but they may spend it from an adulthood or whatever, but the God image was always the stagnant. That was ever the same. And the fact that it actually changes also, I think it's the difference. I see that as the big difference between the normal thought processes. But even those things
that you think of as eternal are changing. Definitely. No, I think that idea just continues. Let's see. Little next paragraph. Everything is riddlesome to one who is becoming, but not to one who is. In other words, if you're going to keep growing, you're going to keep facing things you don't understand and attempting to understand them. We suffer those riddles from which we suffer, but not those which please. I think that continues.
I like the beginning of the next paragraph. To be that which you are is the bath of rebirth.
Yes. And the next paragraph. Is interesting. It sort of introduces a new idea. Remember, we're dealing with highly intuitive thoughts, so we kind of have to kind of hear them and then try to interpret them. As a drop in the ocean, you take part in the current ebb and flow. You swell slowly on the land and slowly sink back again in interminably slow breaths. You wander vast distances in blurred currents and wash up on strange shores, not knowing how you got there. You mount the billows of huge storms and are swept back again into the depths. And he goes on with that. What's he driving at?
You know, that whole idea of the drop in the ocean is a Gnostic concept of what happens to the soul. I wonder if he knew that.
Probably.
It's our experience of the collective experience. And also, he's subject to the unconscious in a historical way, to the vast movement of society.
Yes. I think there's another implication. At least I read it that way.
Well, without this, he can't recognize the heights either, without this experience.
Okay. Still, I think there's another point, which he didn't develop in his work. How individuation affects the world. If you do your individuation process, it will wander vast distances. Does it make sense? He concentrated so much on the inner process, and I think left it to next generations how does that affect other people? How does it affect your community? How does it affect even history sometimes?
You feel he didn't really talk about that?
Well, no.
I guess he just pointed to it.
He pointed to it, and I think I mentioned it maybe it's Saturday. I don't think I mentioned it here. Somewhere, von Franz said, at the end of his life, he wanted next generations to work on this very point. He knew individuation was both subjective and objective, but his resources and his time and energy and the amount of work that needed to be done had him work on the inner dimension of the process, but there is an outer dimension of the process.
I wonder if this is too simplistic, but that movie, Pay It Forward?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't see that.
Whereas one action calls for another action calls for another action.
So. Yeah, exactly.
So an individual at a time.
Exactly. We think of change as something groups do. But I love this one guy on the story. He says every social change begins with one person.
Exactly. Yeah.
Rosa Parks.
Right.
He's aware of that, and he's mentioning it, but you know, he only has so much time. But that's what I get out of that. Who knows? It's admittedly a personal take. And so what he's doing, Carol, then, he would be, in my view, taking that Gnostic myth and temporalizing it, referring it to time and space.
And in effect, he's evolving it because the Gnostic myth does not accept that darkness.
Right. And it sees it as a soul issue when it's also a behavioral issue.
You know, this whole idea of standing for Dan Barry, when he's 89 and talked recently when he was, and it was acknowledged that he probably won't be getting up and making too many more speeches until he's 89. And he keeps going to prison for actively demonstrating against things like nuclear warheads and school and everything. Maybe he just keeps going. There is somebody like Bonhoeffer who really lives his beliefs. But he says, don't worry. Don't even try and figure out how your actions play out. Don't even worry about that. Just do the best you can. That's all you can do. He's saying that's all you can do.
Yeah, I think the danger is that you think, well, you know, my analysis, what good is that doing in the world? Yeah. That if you judge yourself on that criteria, you just collapse.
I mean, well, I did that and nothing happened. How do you know?
Yeah,
you know?
How do you know exactly?
So that's the point. Yeah, I believe it.
Okay, well, we got as far as, we got actually some stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
To say, we'll go back over this, we'll pick up a review of this as a drop in the ocean stuff. I think we'll go pretty quickly through the next column on 276 because it's more just a description of what we've already had. And then we'll do the anchorite so that you can read through. I don't think we'll get past page 270. I got to try to figure out what that. Well, we'll worry about that later. Yeah, just read to two. Read to. I don't know if it's DIES or DS. I think it might be DS. DS ERA. What's DS ERA? The message is dead, isn't it? Anyway, read to either DIES or DS on page 270. Probably won't get that far, but I think we're picking up speed a little bit. Some of the ideas now are repeating. Just different ways to end and moving this same idea forward. So, it stops. Did not stop, though.
Not at all.
Hope you all get home. I'll see you in 2.
If we don't, we'll die happy.
Die with the lowly.
With the lowly, yes.